It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Every day, millions of people head off to work. Unfortunately for many, the workplace is a toxic environment. Your coworkers are annoying or perhaps incompetent. Your boss is a brutal dictator. So how do you deal with the challenges in a workplace like this? I'm joined now in Studio A by Sasha King, an independent career consultant who has some suggestions for helping you deal with the challenges of the workplace. Sasha King, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Oh, thank you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, you're welcome, and it's good to have you with us here in studio, and we want to hear from our listeners. If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What problems are you experiencing at work? What makes your workplace a toxic environment, and what advice are you looking for to deal with it? Sasha King, what are the common modern-day problems that people run into in the workplace?
Well, there are a lot of the common modern-day problems that people run into the workplace are the issue of being overqualified for your job and not being able to seek or gain employment that actually is compensated with your either education or abilities. That leads to a lot of worker frustration. Another issue is, because it's an employer's market, you have the increased problem of employers having increased demands of employees. And because it's harder to get positions, for instance, for the average job that the person is applying for nowadays is 250 to 1,000 other people are applying for the same position. So there's so much competition, you almost have a certain amount of survivor's guilt for people who may have not been laid off and they want to hold on to that job for economic reasons. But if they also look for another position, as talented as they may be, with that many people applying for a job, the chances of you getting your next job without an extensive amount of work is difficult. So people are staying in more toxic environments, and they are sticking with jobs that they normally would have moved on by now.
So you have a situation where there are not as many people employed because of the Great Recession. So for the last 5 years, we've seen unemployment spike up. People are having a harder time finding a job. And as you pointed out, there are people that are simply overqualified for the job. They're settling for something that maybe doesn't match their qualifications, but they need to do something. And you're saying this is leading to some of the dissatisfaction in the workplace.
Yes, it's actually quite frightening. A lot of studies are coming out and saying that when they've studied workplace satisfaction levels, roughly about between 50 and 75% of the workers that they're surveying are very unhappy in their workplace.
Yikes.
So some of the issues that are creating this problem is because you have to do the whole nature of employment now is less with more. Is that the average employee is taking on possibly the jobs of two or three people.
So the whole multitasking thing is
And then the funny thing is the science, if you actually look at it, there's actually some interesting science coming out of Israel that we're finding out that you really can't multitask, and actually the increased workload may be leading to less productivity among workers. So you have a very stressed out worker who's not getting compensated as much because the companies can afford not to give them as much money because, of course, you want to hold on to a job. This is a bad economy.
Right.
So you're having a lot of workplace dissatisfaction. Another issue is growing. It's workplace bullying that you have sometimes people who rise up the food chain that have a very direct, dogmatic, or authoritative management style. And unfortunately, that may be difficult for certain people to deal with on the job. Say you have a meager personality, that you have issues with someone who really is bullying you, either on work. Now, in cases of social media, we're also finding that it works differently among genders. One of the things that we're finding out is that women, when they bully on the job, it tends to not be an overt, aggressive way. One of the things that they'll do is they'll create groups and exclude other people within this.
So kind of a passive-aggressive
yes,
thing going
absolutely.
On.
A passive-aggressive form of bullying. They will not include various different members. We're also even finding out people are taking this as social media, that they are taking their negative attitudes toward either their coworkers or toward their subordinates on social media websites. And some reports I've gotten from some people, they've pretty much destroyed their professional reputations. So there's a lot of toxic things going on in the modern-day work environment.
How much of this – we've mentioned that certainly conditions are a little more challenging mm-hmm. for employees in the workplace. But how much of this Sasha, is employees simply making things difficult for themselves, perhaps by bringing their problems to work or just having a bad attitude?
Oh, no. Thank you for bringing that up. They're one of the things I always encourage all of my clients to deal with. Is to deal with the fact that whenever you're dealing with a problem on the job, you can only control yourself. And so you have to look at the situation and determine how much of this is really something that might be created in my own head. Am I misinterpreting how my manager or my coworkers are viewing me? And then how much of this is really the other person? Does this person have a professional reputation of acting and being a certain way, and do I just have to cope with that? Or does this person have a reputation for just being a direct person, but they may not really mean it? So one of the things I always coach my clients to do is please spend a few minutes, really sit and reflect. Look at the situation. Ask a few other trusted people, sometimes even outside the work environment, because you don't want to get a reputation with your coworkers for being the problem child. So sometimes you can
talk – somebody with a persecution complex.
Absolutely. Or... So one of the things I usually encourage people is don't talk to your coworkers about that, because then you get a reputation. But if you can talk to other peers that work in the industry and you find out, okay, Jan's just like that. You know, she's just really, you know, a direct person. You know, you kind of have to work around that. That's going to make you better. And I'm also very grateful for the fact that you brought up the fact that people do bring their attitudes and complexes to the workforce. One of my favorite resources that I generally tell my clients to read if I think that they are bringing their own home issues to work with them is I usually and generally advise them to read a book called Don't Bring It to Work, Breaking the Family Patterns That Limit Success. One of the things that we're finding through psychology is that a lot of clients that I deal with and people overall, they have various different family patterns, and they bring those family patterns into the workplace. Let me give you an example.
Yeah.
One of the common things that we're finding out is if you had a very demanding parent and you happen to also be sometimes even a middle child, one of the things that you'll do is you will consistently stay in work environments where you will have a very demanding boss whose needs you cannot meet. That reflects something that you grew up in your home environment. So when I see those kinds of patterns and behaviors in some of my clients, I always encourage them to talk to a licensed therapist because I deal with the career consulting end of it. But I also refer them to that resource so they can look at, okay, how are these bigger patterns relating to my work life? Because if you really sit and work with a lot of your clients, you find out, this pattern that's showing up in your work life is also showing up in your personal life, your romantic life. It's an all-encompassing pattern. We all learn certain techniques to deal with stressors and conflicts growing up. And sometimes when we carry them into adulthood, we don't realize maybe we need to change the script.
So as far as people being unhappy, and if they can't solve the problems within the workplace, within the context of their job and what they're expected to do and the people that they work with, the question then becomes, why don't people just leave?
Well, there's a lot of issues which I like to call survivor's guilt. On one hand, they feel guilty because, okay, my friends and coworkers have sometimes lost their jobs and I'm still here. But also one of the things that we're finding out thanks to psychology is that people tend to stay in situations longer when they have something invested in it. So let me give you an example. One of the things I constantly see in a lot of my clients is that they will stay in a job situation even though they know that the technology is moving forward and they're getting behind in terms of keeping up with their field. And they'll stick with this job because I've already put 10 to 15 years in, and if I stay longer, maybe I'll get a greater sense of benefits, or I've been here so long, you know, I'm afraid to leave. So the longer we stay in a situation, the less likely we are to just kind of cut off and do something even if it benefits us. We're just getting emotionally used to it.
Sure. So you're not happy, and you maybe the best thing for you is to leave, but you know you feel like you have too much invested in the job already. There's not a lot of choice out there right now. It's not a good job market, certainly not for job seekers. So then what's the solution?
The solution is actually doing an educated, hedging your bets approach to leaving a job if you decide you do need to leave. So the first thing I actually tell my clients to do is actually meet with a financial planner. Now, why would I say, okay, I'm leaving a job, why would I meet with a financial planner? You need to figure out fiscally how you can leave your job. Is it a situation where you have so many bills right now that you need to make a certain amount of money in order to keep up with your bills? Is it a situation where, okay, if I just stick with this job another 6 months to a year, then I can make a strategic plan and change the direction I want to go? that I can afford. So you want to start with the financial aspect first.
All right, let me just stop you there because we have a caller on the line, Michael, who is traveling from his car phone with a question. His cell phone in his car. Michael, what is your question? Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yeah, hi. I about a year ago left a job where my supervisor was in charge of his nephew, and I didn't mind so much that his nephew got all the easy work. What I did mind was that his nephew got to, break the rules, and even one day, right in front of the supervisor, assaulted me. He threw something at me and hit me in the head. And there was, obviously that supervisor didn't do anything about it. I took it to his supervisor, and it just kind of died there. Nothing happened.
So this person's nephew was your coworker, and his uncle was the boss, and he didn't do anything about your being assaulted. So this brings up the issue of nepotism in the workplace, which might not always end up quite like the situation Michael just described, but how much of a problem can that be?
It's a huge problem. And this is one of those situations where there are sometimes where I try to coach people to try to work within the situation and get what they can out of it. This is one of those occasions where I would actually say you're best off working at leaving. And one of the reasons why we know this is that because of those familial bonds, whenever it's especially a huge risk when you're working either for a family company or you're working in a situation like you were dealing with, where they're going to continue to groom and show that other person favor. And if they're definitely getting to the point where you're talking about physical assault and you've talked to HR, there's nothing you can do to remedy that situation. So one of the things I usually encourage people to do before you decide to go to your next job, because you can go from the frying pan into the fire, you want to always spend some time doing some company research. What do I mean by company research? Company research really gives you a chance to go and find different companies in your field that you possibly could be a good fit for. So when I do company research, or advise people to do that, you go to the website. You go to there. Also, you go to the LinkedIn. You see what the profiles of different people work for the company. But also another thing that you do there, too, is you always try to contact people who work for the company. You need to know when you're going to make jump ship or make changes that you're walking into a better work environment. So in that case, one of the things I also advise people to do, just because of the nature of this economy, please, please, please keep your networking contacts very strong, which means if you have to find 2 days a month that you are going to go and network with people in your field so your name is out there, so you have to leave in what I call an abusive situation like this one, then you want to do that so that way if you do have to switch jobs, you're not spending a lot more time building the contact network you need. So this is one of those situations that was so toxic that outside of basically going into work, making sure you have your job done and avoiding the supervisor when you could, this is not something that you're going to be able to easily remedy. This is one of those things you're going to have to leave.
And you are wisely advising people not to make an emotional decision, but to plan this out.
Yes.
So that if you need to leave, you have somewhere to land, as opposed to making maybe an emotional decision and then you don't have a job and then
not in
what?
This economy. Speaking of that, if we have a second just so I can go back to a couple different other steps of that plan.
Sure.
Okay, so we're just going to go back to that plan, and thank you so much for your comments because that is really becoming a huge problem in the workplace, which is nepotism. Another thing that you want to do when you decide that you may need to leave your situation, you need to take an adult approach to that. And what does that mean? It means you need to figure out whether you're unhappy with the company or you're unhappy with the field in general. In the last case that we just talked about, it seems like the gentleman was having a huge issue with the company and it wasn't him at all. It really was the situation at hand. However, sometimes people are just very unhappy in their particular company and they need to assess whether or not the rest of their field's that way. So what I usually recommend for those people to do? Talk to peers in your field. Find out if your workplace situation seems to be very common in your industry, because that's going to help you make a very educated discussion or decision about whether or not, okay, is this really a good work environment for me, or is this just the industry and I need to get used to this?
And that's a good point. But you have given advice on people seeking advice outside the workplace, which probably is a good idea. You want to be discreet when if you want to talk about the problems that you're experiencing. But at the same time, how important is it for somebody to find an ally at work?
That's the next things I was going to talk about. One of the things I always actually train my client to do, one of the things we do with them is I actually have them start with the first 90-day plan. And one of the first things you do is you try to find a mentor or you try to find an ally in the workplace. So what are some good ways to find allies in the workplace? Some good ways to find allies in the workplace are when you first start working a job or when you're working at a job for at least the first 90 days to 6 months, find out who seems to be really together on the job. And what do I mean by together on the job? Every workplace has favorites, whether we want to admit this or not. So you want to spend some time actually figuring out who the favorites are, who seem to be the people who are on the outside of the workforce, the people that the manager people don't really want to talk to, and then the other people who seem to be get in between place. So what do you want to do in those situations? You want to get to know everyone a different place. You want to go ahead and work at trying to make friendships. One of the things I usually tell people to do is find out who's in your group, your department. Find out who you have similarities with, either personal similarities with, you have like the same activities or professional affinities for, you have similar goals. You want to go ahead and try to cultivate and work at friendships on this. One of the things you also want to look at is with your management people, who seems to be open to the fact that there needs to be changes made in the company and who doesn't open to it. Those are the people that you want to talk to initially if you think it's safe. It's not always safe in every work environment, but those are the people that you want to talk to see if you can actually bring issues and concerns to them.
We're talking with Sasha King. She's an independent career consultant about problems people are experiencing in the workplace. How do you deal with them? And we certainly put a lot on the employees, but there are also the employers and how they handle things. And what do managers need to do to create an environment that allows people to use their talents to do great work, or at least the best work that they are capable of?
What we're finding out is it really comes down to something that Daniel Goleman's done a lot of great work with, is emotional intelligence. And unfortunately, not all managers are emotionally intelligent. But what we're finding out is the best work environments are generally led by managers who, A, lead by example, and B, pay attention to the various attitudes and moods of their employees. So what are some things that you need to look for when you're looking for a work environment? One of the things I always looked for when I was on the even at the interview phase for even my current job is that I always made sure that the leadership and the management and I kind of we actually agreed on what we needed to be done to make sure that there was a better understanding of what my needs were. But another thing that you want to make sure that you have in a work environment and what management is required to do is make sure when you're a new hire that you really pay attention to the human resources policy. Why do I say that? There are going to be times where you deal with really toxic work environments, as like the gentleman caller said before, where you have incidences of abuse and problems. One of the things I usually recommend people do is once the second you notice there are problems, keep a journal of what's going on. Why? If you keep a record of what's going on in your work environment, then if you actually do bring a concern, and I usually tell people, make sure it's a repeat offense, that it's happening for a significant period of time before you bring it to management, because then you become the problem child. What do you mean by problem child? You're the person who brings the problem to the boss, but you don't bring any solutions to those problems, and you also don't bring anything to the table besides your issues. So it's just a way to kind of protect yourself in that. So make sure you know your HR manual, make sure that you have a case, and then you can go ahead and bring it before HR if you need to.
We're out of time, but I did want to work in a Twitter comment from Raiden, who says, please talk about larger systems of oppression, i.e. bullying in the workplace, racism, sexism, and homophobia. That's a lot to cover in just a few seconds.
I actually can.
But go ahead, and then we'll wrap this up.
Okay. One of the things I recommend, and this is a book that almost everyone who comes from any of those groups should actually get when they graduate from college, in my opinion. There's a book called From the Outside In, 7 Strategies for Success When You're Not a Member of the Dominant Group in Your Workplace by Renee Blank and Sandra Slipp. Now, unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of time to get into the workings of this. But what the wonderful thing about that resource and book is that it really explains extensively what do you do when you are dealing with these issues. One of the things you always do when I work into a work environment, because I come from a diverse background, is you always work to find similarities in your group. You always have prepared answers ahead of time to make sure that they are aware of your culture. In my case, I'm multicultural, so I really have to do extra work on that subject. Mm. But you also, the great thing about the book, which I'm not going to have time to get into, is it explains different criteria of when you actually bring an affair or a situation to the management. You cannot be, unfortunately, I wish I could say that this is something that you can constantly bring before management, but it has to be a large incident and a repeated incident before you want to take it before them.
Sasha King is an independent career consultant, and she's been giving us some very good advice on what to do if you work in a challenging work environment. Sasha, thank you so much for spending time with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, our sports guy, Bob Dvorak, on the games that were played and not played the weekend of President Kennedy's assassination. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.